Welcome, welcome to the Bien Quo Show. I'm Steve.
I'm Paul.
We're taping this on a Wednesday night, July 7th. Me and Paul, once again, are at separate locations via the magic of Skype.
Skype is coming very clutch for us. It's saving us a lot of driving, and we're able to talk and focus on what's important.
Yeah, although a few technical difficulties today, it's taken us quite a few tries to get this going, so hopefully it'll hold up for the duration here.
Yeah. We have a packed schedule for you today. A lot of sports, some soccer, baseball, basketball, a little bit of TV, and maybe a news story for you, as well as a Mary Boff kill at the end. But to lead us off right now, we're going to talk about NBA free agency. The big announcement coming tomorrow from LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh have already made up their minds to go to Miami. Carlos Boozer has gone to Chicago, it looks like, and Amari Stoudemire off to New York. Your impression, Steve? Anything stick out to you?
Well, the big thing that sticks out is LeBron's narcissistic one-hour special that he's throwing on ESPN tomorrow. I mean, the nerve of this guy to throw an entire show. Sure, he says he's donating the proceeds of the show to charity, but really, you know, it's all about him. It's all about LeBron's attention and LeBron's brand or whatever, and it's a little sickening. I don't know. What do you think about it?
I think the same thing. LeBron has obviously made this free agent market all about him, and you know, deservedly, he is the best player in the league right now, and I think that, you know, that's his right to do that. You know, it's very narcissistic. It's kind of an annoyance in the sense that we're getting inundated with information from LeBron, and he's not really giving you anything, yet he wants to call an hour-long press conference. But, you know, hopefully after tomorrow it'll all be over and we can just move on.
Yeah, for ESPN, though, to bend over and take it, you know, just do whatever LeBron wants, it's really bends their journalistic integrity. You know, it doesn't speak highly of ESPN.
It doesn't. I mean, but the thing, but they've actually been pretty much going like 24 hours a day on this LeBron coverage anyway. I mean,
yeah, they are so controlled of everything. I mean, they'll put out any LeBron James rumor as to where he'll go, but there's so much catering to LeBron that how do you report accurately on this guy? I mean, you know, if you're a journalist, you can't do it. I mean, Colin Cowherd on his show today, he mentioned the rumor of Delonte West, you know, banging LeBron's mother. And apparently that's a big no-no in Bristol. You can't mention that. So there's a story on Deadspin that the ESPN higher-ups are pretty upset with Cowherd today.
ESPN very much runs a tightly censored, almost propaganda-driven. LeBron definitely is kind of the king of, you know, he's the king of the basketball landscape right now. And it's really tough, I feel like, for most journalists to really come up with reputable, corroborated information. I mean,
yeah. I mean, you look at those stories that they post; they're all, you know, sources close to the situation.
Yeah.
Say
exactly.
None of it is really, you know, oh, this is the guy who told me, you know, LeBron's agent or LeBron's manager or, you know, sources with the Knicks or the Cavs. You know, it's always sources close to the situation or anonymous sources that you can't really trust. You know,
exactly. No, it's pretty frustrating because, you know, they've been kind of bouncing everywhere. Oh, LeBron to Chicago, LeBron to New York, LeBron to Cleveland, LeBron to Miami. And it's every single day it's a new piece of information and it's, you know, just a different team. Do you have any predictions of where you think he ends up?
I'm completely clueless now. You know, last week I know I said I thought he was going to Miami, but now that Bosch is there, you know, can they really afford to sign all three of them and just destroy their cap space? You know, because they would literally not have any money left to sign anyone. And
Right. There's
talk of them each taking less than the max in order to sign more free agents around them. But do you think these guys would do that? Do you think their egos are small enough? I mean, LeBron certainly isn't with this, you know, whole deal that he's throwing tomorrow night.
Yeah, no, there's no chance in my mind that they would take less. Chris Bosh already, you know, wants to sign and trade because he wants the extra $29 million to get the so if Chris Bosh, you know, signs with the Raptors and they trade him, he can earn an extra year's worth of $29 million. Ditto for anyone who goes through a signing trade.
But now that he's going to Miami, there's no chance of that because the Heat only have two guys on contract, Beasley and Chalmers. And the salaries just wouldn't allow a sign and trade. So
exactly. Yeah, no, that's kind of dead in the water. LeBron, I personally have no idea where LeBron goes. I have a suspicion that he ends up in Cleveland and that this was all a dramatic ploy to raise interest in Cleveland.
Yeah, then really this is all for naught, right? I mean, what's the big deal? You're just going back to where you came from. And if he goes back to Cleveland, where he hasn't won and it doesn't look like they're going to be able to put a serious contender together anytime soon, you know, what does that tell you about LeBron? Is he as committed to winning as he says he is?
Yeah, it's true. And I think wherever he goes, you know, the pressure, because he's kind of raised his own expectations and hyped himself up so much with this whole process, the expectations are going to be enormous. And if he ends up back in Cleveland, it's going to be, you know, pretty much the same team, right? And it's kind of boring for the rest of us to say, wow, he just went through, he's been building up the hype and the drama for like 2 years, and he's going to end up right back where he started. But hey, maybe he'll shock us all and pick like the Nets or like the Knicks or something like that.
Yeah, well, I doubt that, but you know, you never know.
Never know.
I guess we'll all find out on the ESPN special tomorrow night. Will you be watching that live, Paul?
You know, honestly, it's tough. I don't really want to, but then at the same time, I really want to know.
Yeah, it's, you know,
it's one of those, you can't stay away, but you're also kind of sick of it.
It's the same paradox that all of these teams are in, I think. These teams don't want to bend over and do whatever LeBron wants because they have egos too, these general managers, these people who are negotiating with him. But if you want him, that's what you got to do because LeBron is holding all the cards and no one else is holding anything. No one else has any leverage.
Nope, none whatsoever. And it's funny that you know, the Knicks went and signed Amari Stoudemire, and the Bulls got Carlos Boozer. It's like those teams. Well, the Knicks specifically said that, you know, signing Amari isn't going to preclude them from going after LeBron. But at the same time, it's like, oh yeah, we'll just get the next best free agent. Well, the drop off from a guy like LeBron to, you know, a Boozer is a pretty dramatic drop off, and that's tough to. You can't really quantify that and say, okay, well, we got the next best free agent. So.
Yeah, but you know, Chicago, I think, other than Miami, of course, Chicago would probably still be the best roster he could go to.
Absolutely, yeah.
With Boozer and Dang and Noah and Rose.
Rose, yep.
He could fit in and play two guard there.
That'd be a hell of a squad.
Yeah.
The Knicks are really stoked about getting Amari. I'm not really convinced for the Knicks that's that great. I don't think Amari is that good. I think once Steve Nash leaves him, he'll be kind of exposed as being a athletic, great finisher who won't be able to get the ball, you know, 8 feet from the hoop with an easy running jump for a dunk off of a great Nash pass.
Yeah, unless LeBron is there to feed him the ball.
If LeBron is there, he'll be fine and he'll continue to reap the benefits.
Yeah, this guy, he doesn't play defense, he doesn't rebound, so I mean, what's left? You get a
he doesn't even rebound for a big guy.
Yeah, you're gonna have a guy who gets you 20 and 8, and that's about it, and you're paying him $100 million.
Exactly.
That's gonna take you to the promised land. Good luck.
I don't think so. Yeah, exactly, that's not gonna happen. But yeah, so we'll see tomorrow, I guess, in one way or another this entire saga will finish up, and I think everyone at this point is kind of ready for it to be done. So
I agree.
Hopefully it works out. The next topic we have is the World Cup, which we are now, the final matchup is finally set. The third place game is set as well. We have a Spain Netherlands finale and a Germany Uruguay, third place game on Saturday. It's really been a pretty crazy last week of soccer. I say this, well, I have a lot of opinions, so I'll let you go first, Steve.
Really? That's good, because I have zero opinion on the World Cup whatsoever.
Okay. Do you want to throw it back to me?
No, I couldn't care less now that the U.S. is out. And, you know, what, Spain and the Netherlands? What do I know about Spain and the Netherlands? Not much. So The only thing I really care about is the octopus. Have you heard about Paul the Octopus, your namesake?
I've not heard about the octopus, no.
Paul the Octopus is an octopus who they put two clams in two boxes in the tank with the octopus, and they let the octopus choose one of the clams to go to. And each of those clams is also attached to a flag of the country who's playing today. The octopus has predicted the last few matches correctly. He predicted Spain over Germany and the last few ones before that. So be on the lookout for the octopus to predict who is going to win. But other than that, you know, I really have no interest in who wins this.
Wow. That's a pretty impressive octopus right there.
The octopus is more interesting than the actual game.
I did not know about that. Thanks for yes. enlightening me.
You're welcome.
Well, actually, I got to say, you know, I've been a pretty adamant soccer hater for a really long time. And, you know, I'm not going to go watch casual soccer. But I have to say, the past week, the games have been really riveting. And I say that as someone who cares nothing about the countries involved, who doesn't really enjoy watching soccer, playing soccer, any of that. That said, it's been great drama. The Ghana-Uruguay game was just phenomenal. The missed penalty shot, the purposeful handball, and all the, you know, penalty kicks afterwards was as dramatic a finish as I've ever seen in pretty much – well, definitely in soccer, but definitely one of the most dramatic ones in sports in general.
Were you in New York when these games happened?
I was in New York.
Okay, no wonder, because I was wondering, like, these games are during the middle of the day. How are you watching all these games, Paul?
Yeah, well, those games specifically were over the weekend, and yep. so
that's probably why, you know, I'm not into this at all, is because all the games are in the middle of the day. You know, they're not at a convenient prime time, you know, viewing time slot.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
So I have an excuse there.
Yeah, no, that's I'll give you that. And I think there's a few things I've learned about soccer. One, you have to really watch in the right environment with the right atmosphere. Like if you and I sat down, Steve, and tried to watch soccer, we'd both get really bored because neither one of us is that into it or knows that much about it.
It's got to be at a bar, pretty much.
Exactly. But if you're at a bar with, you know, hardcore fans or both sides, it's impossible not to get caught up in the atmosphere and the revelry. So that's, you know, that's really exciting to see it, you know, with people who actually care about the teams as opposed to us.
Yes.
At the same time, we can also, I think, you know, you watch the U.S. play and you watch some of the teams that the U.S. beat, you wouldn't really call that good soccer. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, just as a sports fan, you start to, even if you don't know a whole lot about a sport, you can appreciate when the play is amped up and the performance is heightened. And, you know, watching teams like Germany and Spain and the Netherlands and Uruguay play, even if you can't appreciate, for me, it's kind of like watching, you know, like the Lakers and Celtics play as opposed to like the Warriors, right? You know, I hate the Celtics, I hate the Lakers, but I can appreciate good basketball when I see it. And it, to a lesser degree, that's kind of what the soccer tournament's been like for me.
I can't really tell, to be honest. You know, I can't really tell good soccer from, you know, from the USA Ghana game. You know, for me, you know, Landon Donovan's fine. Unless it's some fancy shit like what Brazil does, you know, with their nifty passing and
highlights
fancy moves.
And,
yeah. If it's not that, I can't tell what's great soccer and what's not.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, the other thing is I think there's just so much more drama when you see two good teams go at it. It's like watching the March Madness tournament, you know what I mean? Like when you get down to the finals or even like the final four and sometimes you see those epic games, you know, maybe you can't realize what good soccer is, but you can at least see the drama unfolding going back and forth and both teams really, really wanting it.
Right. I think the storylines are much more interesting than the actual game.
I will agree with you there. The game of soccer is still the game of soccer, and I'm not a huge fan of it. But I really I caught myself really enjoying and looking forward to soccer for the first time in my life, and it was a really weird experience. And it, honestly, it hasn't really, you know, and I haven't seen the games this week because they've been during the day, and as a byproduct, I haven't been nearly as into it. So, you know, it's a very fickle bandwagon type of relationship that I have going on.
Well, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it is the World Cup after all, the biggest, you know, other than the Olympics, the biggest sporting event in the world. And we'll all love this for the next few days and then forget about it for another 4 years and then we'll love it again.
We will. And that's perfectly fine. This is the first time that I've actually remotely cared about it. So I think the soccer fans would be happy to know that I've even considered liking it.
Well, that they will be. Yeah, let's move on from this. Okay. I can't talk about the World Cup anymore. I'm sorry. let's talk about baseball.
Okay.
Because I want to bring up the story about the Giants the other day, who were in their hotel in Milwaukee. I told Paul this the other day.
You always have to make the Giants look bad. Thanks, Steve.
Well, you're welcome. You know, I feel it's my job as a true Doyer fan. But they were in their hotel in Milwaukee, and Pablo and Renteria asked to leave the hotel. They actually checked out and went somewhere else because they thought it was haunted.
Con fantasmas, which are ghosts in Spanish.
So, Paul, defend your boys. Why are they scaredy little pussy?
Way to censor yourself there.
Well,
honestly, they were probably left-handed pitchers because Pablo was hitting like 210 against lefties this year.
Oh, so that's what the ghosts were. Okay.
I think so. And Renteria has just been god-awful since he's been healthy, although he had 3 hits tonight. And, you know, when things aren't going well and you can't hit anybody, I think that's probably part of the reason why they were a little bit upset and intimidated, because of the ghost of Randy Wolf lurking and Chris Narveson, those Milwaukee lefties.
Yeah, those guys inspire the fear of God in you.
They really do. And
by the way, Casey Blake just struck out for the third time tonight. That was fun to watch. Carlos Santana probably hit 2 more homers tonight. That makes me feel really good.
That feels great, doesn't it? Well, I don't know if you noticed, Steve, but this series, the Giants managed to score a lot of runs. They scored 15 tonight.
Yeah, I saw that. Timmy, you know, he mailed it in tonight, and he didn't even really have to go any harder.
Yeah, Timmy struck out 10 through 7 innings, which was fantastic, but, you know, Buster launched 2 bombs, including a slam and 4 hits, and the Giants put up 27 runs in the series, which is, I don't even remember the last time they got over, like, maybe 15 runs in a series.
Well, good for them.
Yeah, well, that 7-game losing skid really hurt, but now that Benji's gone, I think everyone can breathe a little easier.
Tell me, Paul, how does it feel to have a great young catcher? Because I wouldn't know. I have no idea what that feels like.
It feels great. I think it's a little shaky. I mean, Buster, for whatever reason, has really broken out over the past week and a half. You know, he was slumping big time when Benji was around, but now in the last 7 to 10 games, he's got 3 homers, 4 homers now. And he's gotten the average back up to like 330 or so.
Yeah, Benji, I think Benji kind of screwed with his head. You know, he was kind of wondering, am I the guy? Am I not the guy? And so that's definitely helping him out, I think, having Benji not be there anymore.
He's definitely got the peace of mind for getting to hit. And, you know, most catchers usually struggle, you know, behind the plate as opposed to at first base. But Buster's looking good so far. I don't know if you also saw, you should probably read Benji Molina's blog post after he got traded. I don't know if you've read it, Steve.
No, I haven't. He's a very sensitive dude, so I'm kind of wondering, you know,
he basically wrote a post, and I guess, you know, usually when you get traded, you're informed by like a front office member to kind of break the news to you, as opposed to finding out from like the media or a teammate or something like that.
By the way, Garrett Anderson just struck out again. I'll let you know. He's now batting about 180. So, anyway, go on.
Gee, money. But anyway, so the Giants basically usually are pretty good at handling the situation, but this time, for whatever reason, they regretted to inform Molina about it. And, you know, that's a bad situation because you don't want him finding out through other people. So Freddie Sanchez was like, dude, I'm so sorry, man. If there's anything I can do, just let me know. And Ishikawa was like, hey, how you doing? Benji's like, what? I'm fine. Benji had no idea. And he's like, how you taking it? And Benji's like, what? And Ishikawa just like got up and left.
Oh, man, that's awkward. And then
Bernal was like, you know, I just want to say you're one of the classiest guys I've played with.
Oh, so basically, poor Benji.
Yeah, Molina found out the hard way, and obviously he was a little hurt by it. You know, he said he loved the city of San Francisco, loved the fans, and wasn't expecting to get, you know, kind of shoved out the door in this way. But he actually did have a very nice blog post. You know, he had a very, very nice things to say about Buster Posey, and I guess Buster's married, and about how their wives hang out and stuff. But it's you feel kind of bad for Molina because he is a good guy. He's just slow, really not very good, and extraordinarily sensitive. But it you know it's sad to see him go, but I think it's time with Buster and Bumgarner up the. The Giants are moving forward with the future.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for the guy. I mean, he's just a nice, lovable, fat dude, you know?
Yeah. There was also the story recently of, you know, the sausage race in Milwaukee? The Giants are in Milwaukee right now.
Right, yeah.
So I guess this year, or yesterday, Pablo came out of the dugout during the sausage race.
Did he pull a Randall Simon?
He didn't pull the Randall Simon. He didn't knock the guy over.
Oh, okay. But that's good.
He almost got floored by a chorizo.
But I would think he would pancake the chorizo. I could think he would just, you know, face that way and take care of the Italian.
Well, last year, apparently Benji did hit the chorizo, and there was a little bit of a collision at home plate.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so.
I think the sausage race, for me, has fallen behind the president's race in D.C. as the most fun mascot race.
You like the president's
race? I like
more?
The president's race more, yeah, because they have a fun gimmick where Teddy Roosevelt never wins.
And oh, that's a good one.
There's a whole website called letteddywin.com. You should check it out. It's really funny. Every game, seemingly, something bad happens to Teddy where, you know, he'll get sabotaged. He'll run the wrong way, or some other mascot will come out and tackle him, or he'll get disqualified by some technicality. But, you know, Teddy will always find a way to lose, and so a group of Nats fans created letteddywin.com and trying to get Teddy a win, but it hasn't happened yet, so we'll
I guess there's more of a vested interest with presidents than with pork products.
Yeah, and Teddy's so happy. If you look at the way they designed his mascot, he's all smiling, he's got the glasses, you know, he's just the most fun, and it's sad that he hasn't won a race.
Washington apparently is beating up Milwaukee in the relay race category for ballpark entertainment.
Definitely so. Yes, I would have to say.
Yeah, well, that'll be something that I think the Giants or Dodgers should bring, because that would be pretty entertaining to see.
They be though? I don't think what would the Dodgers. I mean, the Dodgers have never had a mascot, thankfully. But
the Giants have a seal. Giants have Lucille.
Oh, Lucille.
That's Lou Seal. Yeah, he's a dude, though. Not right. Lou Seal, but Lou Seal.
Yeah, okay.
I can't imagine a seal race, though, or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, if it's L.A., what would you do? Would you, like, drunken celebrity racing? I mean, I think that would be fun.
That would be okay. Maybe, like, C-list celebrities who are, like, washed out and have gone through rehab or something like that.
That should be a rule. Like, if you're a celebrity and you're at Dodger Stadium, you have to come out for the fourth inning race and run around the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if Robert Downey Jr. during his dark days, you know, had to win the celebrity race to be considered a legitimate celebrity again.
Yeah, especially if you're, like, hammered, you know, you've had a few Dodger dogs, a couple brews, and you got to run around the outfield. I think that would be really fun. Like, when we went to the Yankee game a couple weeks
ago. Oh, yeah.
Tom Hanks was there, Ashton Kutcher and Demi Moore were there. You know, I think Wilmer Valderrama was there again. You know, a lot of celebrities were there, so, you know, they could pick and choose some and have them come down and run around the track, I feel like.
That would be Wilmer Valderrama running around would be fantastic as Fez.
Yeah.
Well, this is a nice little segue into to fans at baseball games, because I know you wanted to talk about the guy who got hit in the face while chatting on his cell phone at the game. What are your thoughts on that guy? And also the unfortunate firefighter who fell off the second deck last night at the Ranger game.
Yeah, that was scary, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Man, I didn't see that until this morning, and I went into work and I pulled it up on YouTube, and man, God, just to think watching that guy fall from a deck, you could see the entire crowd was just stopped.
Like, ooh.
Yeah, play on the field stopped. Everyone, you know, all the players and the umpires.
Players, umpires, everyone just, you know, they couldn't watch and, you know, praying in the outfield. And, you know, it's sad, and, you know, these types of things happen, and there's not really much you can do about it.
Yeah, I mean, he was reaching over the railing to try and catch a foul ball, and he just lost his balance and fell.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, it's just really, there should be a higher railing in that front row anyway. It was really, I mean, I don't know if you've ever sat in the front row on the high deck, but It's a little scary how low the railing is. I mean, they should have raised these things a foot or two a long time ago. And to me, this is, it's kind of just a matter of time before something like this happened.
No, I know what you mean. When I actually the scariest experience I've had was when I was watching the UCLA Sweet 16 game when we beat Gonzaga, and I was in the front row of the second deck at the Oakland Coliseum, and you know I was jumping up and down and hugging and whatever, and I literally thought I was gonna die. Like that's, you know, I was like, I'm totally gonna just jump this little 3 foot railing and fall like 40 feet down to the deck below and just break my neck.
Yeah.
And when you're, you know, in this case, you know, the guy is obviously so intent on catching this foul ball that there's no way he's going to, I mean, you know, most of us are going to kind of remember that, you know, not to lean over too far.
Yeah.
This would happen.
When you're drunk, you have no depth perception anyway. I mean, they really need to raise this thing a foot or two just, you know, just to be safe. So something like this doesn't happen ever again.
I think they already did raise it in the past once because they also had, there was a woman who fell in the 90s.
Oh, really?
She was taking a picture and she leaned back too far and fell down.
Mm.
So I think they did raise it once already, but you're right. There's no need to really take a chance on it. You might as well just make it safer. But yeah, it's just unfortunate. It's not anybody's fault, you know.
Yeah.
It just happens.
And apparently the guy who fell is a big Rangers fan. Like Nolan Ryan went to visit him in the hospital and he talked to him and he's in high spirits. He's doing fine.
That's good. So, that's important.
Yeah. And so it doesn't look like he's going to sue the team, but you know, you're always inviting liability whenever something.
Oh yeah,
like
absolutely.
This happens,
yeah, it's in the team's best interest not to have this type of event happen at all. So.
Yeah. But yeah, so you know, total sympathy to that guy, but zero sympathy to the guy on the cell phone who got hit in the face. And I don't know if you've seen this video, but the guy is sitting down the right field foul pole at Yankee Stadium. He's on his cell phone, not paying attention to the game, and someone, I forget who was. Do you know who was hitting, Paul?
I don't remember.
Yeah,
who was hitting.
But someone was hitting, and they hit a screamer down the right field line. It takes a bounce, hops up into the stands, and whacks this guy straight in the schnoz.
To his credit, he shook it off.
Yeah, that's...
You know, he literally just like, he got hit in the face with the baseball and just like, yeah, well, I'm fine, whatever.
But zero sympathy for this guy who is not paying attention to the game, just, you know, on his cell phone talking about whatever. You know, those are some of the people I hate the most who show up to the ballpark.
I will agree with you.
I've compiled a list here of other fans who show up at the ballpark who I just can't stand. So cell phone guy is number one. The guy on the cell phone who is probably talking to other friends who are also at the ballpark, standing up, you know, waving, saying, "Can you see me now? Can you see me now?"
Yeah.
And of course, no, we can't see you because there are 50,000
40,000 fucking people around here.
So just sit down, asshole. The next guy is the guy who boos every time the pitcher throws to first.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this happen at Dodger games, or I mean Giant games, because this happens at Dodger games
every single time. Yeah, it kind of just happens, I think, in all of baseball, just, you know, in a widespread manner.
Yeah, it's just, you know, throwing over to first is a part of the game. It's a necessary part of the game to hold runners on. But these fans don't understand that, and every time the pitcher throws over to first, they boo like no other, and it's really annoying. You know, most of these annoyances just span from general fans' lack of knowledge of the game.
Yes, yes. Ignorance more than anything.
Yeah. Also, another one related to that is the people who cheer every time someone hits a fly ball, you know, thinking it's going to go out.
It's like a medium depth pop-up, yes.
It's a room service fly ball to left. You know, you don't need exactly. to be busting your load over that.
Yep. My favorite one on your list is the guy who starts the wave or actually anyone who participates in the wave, because I find the wave to be incredibly disruptive and just really, 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 really stupid. It's just, it's kind of fun if you're not really there to watch the game, but then that means you're not there to watch the game.
Yeah, it's really a function of people being drunk and people not paying attention than finding something else to do. That's why they start the wave.
Yeah, or it's basically, I mean, the best example is really at all those UCLA football games, because it's inevitably like the 12-year-olds who got a free ticket for the UCLA I'm going to college program, and they don't care about the game, and when it's like 24 left in the fourth quarter, apparently it's like a fantastic time to start.
Yeah, it's that's the prime time to start the wave right there. All right, other than people who start the wave, I really can't stand the people who chant Yankees suck or Barry sucks. You know, these people, you know, whether you're okay, you're a diehard Dodger fan, you hate the Giants with all of your heart, you're a diehard Red Sox fan, you hate the Yankees with all of your passion. But these people obviously don't suck, okay? The Yankees have won the most championships of any team ever. Barry Bonds, probably the best player any of us have ever seen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you saying that they suck just means you're not creative enough to think of a better chant.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, that's it's kind of depressing to hear the same chants over and over again. And it's tough to get good when the catch is on, though, because it has to be catchy enough to be understood, but at the same time, clever enough that you're not just saying the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy to hear you say that Barry is one of the best, you know, probably the best player you'll ever see, because.
Well, you know, with the caveat that he probably juiced out of his mind. Well, not probably. He definitely juiced out of his mind. But
I'm not going to argue that one.
Yeah, ignoring that fact, he's the best player I've ever seen.
That's all I need to hear, Steve. How about your Dodgers? How are they looking right now?
They just got beat again by the Marlins. They got beat last night also. So they're three back, along with Colorado, who have put together two great comebacks in a row against the Cardinals.
Unbelievable comebacks, yeah.
They're also three back. So the Giants are, what, five back? I think something like that.
Giants
so,
are currently five back, yeah.
Yeah, so this whole thing is a giant crapshoot right now. We still got half of the season left, and you know, anything could happen. But the Dodgers, for the most part, other than these last two games, have been playing really well lately. You know, Matt Kemp has come back. Rafael Furcal is amazing. You know,
he's looking like he's about 5 years younger than he
is. Yeah, we haven't seen Rafael Furcal at this level since the year that he signed, his very first year with the Dodgers. When after the break or something, I remember he had an OPS of 900. And he was really our best player down the stretch. And, he's playing really well right now. He's hitting about 330 or something. And, you know, sadly, he didn't make the All-Star team when frickin' Omar Infante did, which is just a complete joke.
They're about like 120 Infante. I'm not sure how in hell he snuck on there.
Yeah, Omar Infante, that's a complete joke.
That's one of the most outrageous All-Star selections that I've seen, period, because he's not even really playing every day, and he's not doing anything
utility guy.
Well, yeah, exactly. There's really and I've heard they're trying to make a push to appreciate all, you know, types of players, but I mean, give me Ryan Zimmerman over Omar Infante, please.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Or Joey Votto, maybe. How about the NL leader in OPS? How about that?
Votto would work as well. I don't really care who. I mean, like I said, there's probably about 120 players to take over Mr. Infante.
That is obviously the biggest dumb move of the All-Star team selections. Omar Infante. Completely indefensible.
Charlie Manuel is getting a little up in age. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
So who on the Giants?
Actually, that's the Dodgers are. The Giants have Tim Lincecum and Brian Wilson. They're hoping that maybe Aubrey Huff can sneak on there somehow, because he leads the Giants in every offensive category.
Right, but, as an injury replacement for someone else, right?
Exactly. But for now, it's just Timmy and Wilson. And Timmy honestly hasn't even been that. He's been good, but he hasn't been his usual self. So Matt Cain could have had a run at it, but he's just had too many losses. He's 6-7.
Yeah, he's always been the hard luck guy.
Exactly.
From the Dodgers, we have Ethier and Broxton, which seems pretty justified.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you would probably mount a large campaign for Hongqi Kuo if you could.
Oh, Hongqi Kuo has been the most dominant reliever in baseball this year. He definitely should be on the team. And Rafael, I mean, as we just said, Rafael should definitely be on this team over Omar Infante. But you can't justify having four All-Stars from the Dodgers when they're not even leading their division. You know, that's probably true. Yeah,
that would indicate that the rest of the team must be really terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I would personally have put Hongqi Kuo on the team over Broxton, But him not being the closer, he doesn't get as much exposure as the big guy.
Exactly. Big old Broxton. He's the one that's going. Yeah, well, I guess we'll see which home run sluggers will mess up their swings for the second half in the home run derby.
Yeah.
And hopefully, I guess there's no Giants in there, so I'm not too worried about any of them.
All right, let's move on to a topic that we both really wanted to talk about today. Summer TV shows. Well, not summer TV shows, but TV shows that we're catching up on over the summer.
There you go.
Paul, you're about halfway into the first season of Friday Night Lights, am I right?
I am. I'm a little over halfway, and I've watched, I think, 14 episodes so far. I've actually really enjoyed it so far. I think it's been good. My one qualm is that I wish there was more football. I know I've been saying that for weeks, but I just, in my mind, there can't be an episode that has no football in it, or that even the game scenes are only like 5 minutes long.
Right. Well, I've got bad news for you, because season one has by far the most football of any of the seasons.
Does it really?
Yeah.
That's kind of depressing.
It just goes downhill from the football standpoint from there.
Okay.
But that's because I think Friday Night Lights, while ostensibly about Texas high school football, it's really about small town community, you know, more than football.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about these characters and their relationships and the town that they live in. And, you know, football kind of takes a backseat to that as the series progresses.
Well, that makes sense. And I think that's, you know, honestly why it's a good show is because of those other elements. You know, you really feel much more invested in the characters than you would otherwise if it was just about football all the time. So it definitely makes sense. I just, as a sports fan, would love to see more football. I do really like it. I think, you know, the rest of this first season will be great. I could see it possibly getting either overdramatic in the sense that, like, you know, all TV shows kind of run out of steam and they just start throwing all sorts of, like, weirdo combinations of, like, romantic interests and, you know, kind of ridiculous topics together.
That definitely happens in season two.
Okay. I mean, you can already see it in season one. They've already touched on, in both football and otherwise, all the big topics, you know, steroids, recruiting, recruiting violations, injured players, career-threatened injuries. I mean, like, you know, from a football perspective, you're touching on all the dramatics you could possibly have.
Have you gotten to the racism episode yet?
Yes, I have gotten to the racism episode.
Okay, I thought that was a really good episode.
That was a good episode.
So what was the last episode that you saw?
I think it actually was it was probably the second one after the initial racist comments.
Oh, okay.
So the team, I think Smash just walked out with the rest of the black players on the white coach who started all the trouble.
Okay.
And yeah, I need to probably watch one tonight to see where it goes from there.
Yeah, that's a good storyline. they definitely take cues from real life situations. The slip of the tongues that these people have.
Yeah, that was very well done.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a great portrayal of kind of the media. And, you know, he definitely didn't, the guy didn't start off intending at all to say what he said.
Yeah. But the media, they prod him and they try to get that out of you.
In your mouth and they egg you on and they'll do whatever they can to get that quote. And that was a very good portrayal of that. That was definitely well done. And, you know, there have been a lot of issues in the show that I feel like some of them are just feel a little underdeveloped and a little bit half, not half baked, but just like not fully there. But that one particularly was a really good portrayal. And you have started The Wire.
I have watched the first three episodes of season one of The Wire.
What's your take so far?
This is my second attempt to start The Wire. Last summer, I tried to start it. I watched the first episode and I thought to myself, what's the big deal? But in retrospect, you know, I admit that I wasn't so attentive on that first watch, and so I wasn't really picking up all the nuances of what was going on. You know, The Wire is a show where you really have to pay attention, and you can't just watch and let things
zone
happen.
Out.
Yeah, you really have to try and pick up on all the dialogue and what they're trying to say, because, you know, that's the kind of show it is. But, yeah, having said that, I'm really enjoying it this time around. The first three episodes, you know, so far, I think are fantastic. And I can't wait to see what happens later in the season. The overwhelming theme of these first three episodes is the cover-your-ass aspect of the government workers. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not sure if that's a prevailing theme throughout the rest of the series, but That's been the overwhelming message of the first three episodes, is that everything these government workers do is to cover their own asses. And you see how the inefficiencies and the bureaucracy just kill any effectiveness that they have, and how the drug dealers are actually more effective
Absolutely.
than the people trying to catch them.
They're
And
motivated by profit, and then profit's king in this world.
right. And when you have these bureaucracies and you're covering your ass, in private industry, that happens to an extent, but at the end of the day, if you're not making profits, you go out of business. But with these police and the DA's office, and they're just trying to cover their ass. At the end of the day, they don't have any profits they have to make. They can waste all the money they want, and they just tax the people more. So there's really not that incentive there, and that's kind of what I feel like the message is of this first season so far.
That's a really good observation. I think that's kind of where it starts. I think you'll definitely get once you kind of it's tough to kind of pick up on all the characters when you're first starting because they all kind of either look similar or they just have such short appearances that it's tough to get too attached to them. But I think as the season progresses, you'll really get more and more attached to the characters, and not everyone is as straightforward as they seem. And I think that's really what makes the show is very much a it's a very much a character show in the sense that, each character brings something unique to the table, but it's also very much a like not a plot show, but like a social commentary show in the sense that you could take any character away and the show would still go on and, not feel like you're missing anything. So I think for me, the light bulb didn't really click till like season or episode like 5 or so. And that's when it was like it went from being like a bunch of characters and kind of these like observations like you're making to all of a sudden like, wow, this is really crazy.
One thing that I found really bothersome though is that they cast the guy who plays Julius in Remember the Titans as
Oh,
Antoine
yes.
Barksdale. So
Yep.
every
Yep.
time I see him, I
There's
just think of, strong side.
left side, strong side,
Yeah, and
absolutely.
I can't keep a straight face. But other than
It's tough.
that, it's great.
It's tough to really. The funny thing is, most like well, we had this discussion earlier. Most of these characters haven't really been in big shows, but for whatever reason, the fact that he's the main drug dealer, it's like a little bit harder to take him seriously, because he's you kind of I don't know. He plays such a nice guy and such a good dude in Remember the Titans. It's tough to really, hate him for it in The Wire. But yeah, keep us posted. I think you'll like it.
Yeah,
And
we'll definitely have to talk about it more, especially as I finish these seasons, and we'll hopefully talk about Friday Night Lights more as you close out that season one.
absolutely. And character wise in Friday Night Lights, I really love. I just have to say really fast that I think Tim Riggins looks a lot like Rafael Nadal,
He does. He
with that
does.
hair and everything. Matt Saracen is a good character. You just got a feel for the guy.
Tim
I'm start.
Riggins is probably my favorite character on the show. The guy who plays him, Taylor Kitsch, he's actually Canadian, and so he has to do a Texas accent throughout this whole thing. And I don't know if you've looked for that, but you can kind of tell hints of his Canadian accent seeping
I
through
have
at some
not
point.
noticed, so I'm gonna have to keep an eye on this
But
from
yeah,
now
keep
on.
an eye out for that. But yeah, he's a great character, Tim Riggins.
Okay, yeah, no, he's definitely one of my favorites so far. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the rest of the season.
All right, because of technical difficulties, the Skype keeps cutting out on us. We're going to cut it a little short this week. So
Yeah,
let's.
we were just singing the virtues of Skype at the start of this podcast, and
Yeah,
now
you know what?
we've
Fuck
dropped
Skype.
like
Skype sucks.
We've dropped like three calls, and it's c consistently cutting in and out. So now we're just over it, and we just want to finish up.
All right, so let's get to our Mary Boff kill and let's get out of here.
Okay.
So the one I got for you this week. In honor of Lindsay Lohan's sentence to jail time, I'm proposing three teen stars who eventually went downhill. The past, present, and future, if you will, of teen stars who went downhill. So we'll start with Britney Spears, who is the past, Lindsay Lohan, who is the present, and Miley Cyrus, who I think is obviously the future next teen star to go downhill. So, Paul, have at it.
Oh gosh, this is a really tough one because obviously the fact that they've all gone downhill or will go downhill makes marrying them really, really unattractive. Like extraordinarily unattractive. Honestly, I think I would fuck Lohan. She's still got kind of that, like, crazy, but, like, I don't know about hot, but, like, just, like, kind of crazy vibe. But she's also kind of psychotic and delusional, and that's not good to marry. The thing is, I really, really dislike Miley Cyrus. I think I've only heard her speak, like, once.
Oh, her voice is...
It's terrible.
Unbelievably annoying, yeah.
Yeah, it's really annoying. She just gives you the vibe that she's just, like, incredibly stupid.
Her not being 18 yet doesn't help either.
You can do one of the three, but you probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
Legally, especially if you're going to mention it on a podcast.
Yeah. You know, we don't condone that sort of thing at all.
I think I'll chuck Miley and marry Brittany.
Yeah. You know what?
Which is a really weird way of being okay with that, but I guess I am. What about yourself?
I would have to say the same thing. And, you know, it's really sad. Yeah, we would have, you know, it's really sad. You know, you can't do anything but kill Miley Cyrus. Because, one, she's underage, so you can't fuck her. And, I mean, I'm sure you could marry her, but would you really be able to stand her? You know, I mean, she does have that Disney empire of money.
True.
So, you know, but also Britney Spears, I think, also has a shitload of money that she made back when she was hot.
Yeah.
So... God, I hate the idea of marrying Britney Spears, though, getting Kevin Federline's sloppy seconds.
Isn't that awful? That
oh, my
sounds,
God. That makes that me want to puke. Terrible.
Yeah.
But you can't marry Lindsay Lohan. I mean, if you're looking at it from a money standpoint, who can be your sugar mama? Lindsay Lohan's only made a couple movies, you know.
She's definitely snorted the rest away.
Yeah, she's going through all of it like nothing, and you know she's going to run out pretty soon. She's going to end up like Antoine Walker. So, you know, you can't marry her, so you've got to fuck her. And, you know, so logically, we arrive at this conclusion where you have to marry Britney Spears.
Logic always wins.
Yes. And kill Miley Cyrus.
Kill Miley Cyrus. I like that. My turn for you. Oddly enough, Miley Cyrus is also in my trio here. I'm going with the kind of like teen star, teen like Nickelodeon star, which is really weird for me because I never watched any of these three, but I feel like I can never tell the three of these apart. I mean, I can, but like they're all kind of the same. Anyway, without further ado, Hilary Duff, Miley Cyrus, and Amanda Bynes.
Amanda Bynes, who just retired from acting. A couple weeks ago, but actually, very surprising. But see, I think this is another pretty clear-cut one. I've got to kill Miley Cyrus again for the reasons that I mentioned earlier. I don't know if you saw Hilary Duff when she was proposed to, but her fiance proposed to her at a hockey game, and from the pictures, you know, from what everything seemed like. She said yes, and then immediately went down on him in the booth.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that seems like
I didn't see this.
That seems like the kind of wife that I would want. So I think I definitely have to marry Hilary Duff and fuck Amanda Bynes.
Not Miley, huh?
No. Miley's going in the trash once again.
Did you know there's only one L in Hilary? For Hilary Duff?
Really? That's really annoying.
Apparently. That's really strange. I just looked her up to try to get like a more recent picture in a Wikipedia. And yeah, there's only one L. Anyway, from my perspective... Oh, now I remember what I was going to ask you instead for the three. That'll be next week. Anyway.
Okay.
I would obviously chuck Miley again because I just can't stand her. I don't really know a whole lot about either Hilary Duff or Amanda Bynes. For some reason, Amanda Bynes feels more wifely to me. I'm not really sure why. Maybe it's because she's less attractive, which is kind of a weird thing to say.
She looks her face, at least, she looks oddly, you know, teenage still. You know, there's just something about the way she looks. She looks
really young still, which
yeah, doesn't look she's like an adult really.
She's actually older than me. I think I'll marry Bynes.
Don't seem very happy about the decision.
Without much fortitude, my decision. I'll marry Bynes and do Duff, I guess. Well, Yeah, I guess that's it. I hadn't really come to a decision when I asked you what you were thinking.
All right. Well, fair enough. Fair enough.
Maybe next week we'll have some more. Well, it's good to have some tough ones, though.
Yeah.
It's good to kind of mix it up and make it challenging.
And again, if you have suggestions for these or any other suggestions, you can email us at bienquo@gmail.com.
So, Steve, how many emails have we gotten so far?
We've gotten one.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, keep them coming. They're just flooding in like no other.
One in like 5 weeks. That's a good start. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for us, that we don't cut out on Skype again. Join us next week for another podcast, and we'll try to make it as exciting as this one.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, shit.
Did you not record?
I didn't record any of that.
He's just going to have to suck on it and like it.